Welcome to Ampersound, a podcast brought to you by the team at Visualist. Ampersound features snippets from our interactive digital magazine, Ampersand. Every episode, we speak to multi-hyphenates who have captivated our minds. We ask them about their code switching, routines, and mindsets. For the full stories, check out ampersand-mag.com. That's ampersand-mag.com. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Today, I'm joined by narrative designer, games writer, and journalist Shala Ramanan. We discuss the importance of representation, how she serendipitously discovered a career that made her whole, and the ceremony of writing with fountain pens. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the stories. Great. So lovely to meet you, Shala, and let's just dive straight into talking about your various side hustles, your various interests and passions. So from reading several profiles about you, I know that you studied English literature at university and ended journalism as a postgrad. So I'm really curious to know how your journey into the game design world came about. Was there an aha moment for you where you decided this is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I suppose there was. Because I wrote about video games as a journalist for a really long time, like several console cycles, which is how you measure the games industry, really, in the life of PlayStations and Nintendos and Xboxes. So I was always writing fiction on the side, even before I was a journalist, when I was doing my first jobs, you know, whether I was a receptionist or whatever. I was always writing fiction. And so, you know, that was the aim, was to, because if you write fiction, you write novels. That's, you know, it was kind of this connection that I made in my head. Maybe that was the literature graduate in me. I was always writing a book or stories, and I'd join evening classes and writing groups. And, you know, so I was sort of always constantly writing fiction. For some reason, I never thought about writing games. It's kind of weird to think now that I could write about games for so long and sort of know so much about the industry, but not think about the people who wrote them or how they were written. I suppose it was so male dominated was one of the things. And also there was that technical barrier that created some hurdle that I guess I didn't think I'd be able to get into that space. So I saw an advert for a course. Well, it was like a writing retreat called Writing for Games. And it had really great people as the tutors, David Varela and John Ingold, who's from Inkle Games, and Rihanna Pratchett was a guest tutor. So I signed up for this writing retreat, and yeah, so it was a week just focused on learning how to write games, and it was kind of intense and inspiring and energizing, and I came away from that week it basically changed the whole course of everything. I was still writing the book, but I immediately started focusing on writing a game in ink. And then I went to a workshop for writing radio drama, because I noticed that the tutors on the workshop, they all had different disciplines within writing. So I did that, and then I wrote and sort of self-produced with a couple of friends a radio play. And then I went to a game jam and met Claire Morwood, and we made Before I Forget. And that, yeah, it was just that sort of accident of happy events that just, like, it was like a domino.
Walls colliding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you knew you wanted to do it. And I guess my question is, why did you want to do it? And when you signed up for the retreat, what did you think that would bring you?
Yeah, well, it was just this sudden realization that I could combine these two aspects of myself, because I was a games journalist and I was a writer, but I'd never thought. So I wanted to do creative writing, but I'd kind of fallen into this commercial side of writing. You know, the main way I earned my money at that time was as a freelance copywriter. Yeah, so all of a sudden I was like, oh wow, like of course people write video games. And I can combine these two things. And yeah, I'll just see. I don't know what I would thought I was, I don't know what I expected from it. I was just kind of excited and yeah, just see what happened. And going on writing retreats and things like that, just like immersing yourself in writing with other creative writers is always kind of cool and exciting.
You used the word craft a lot when you were describing the people that you were learning from. Could you expand more on that? What does craftsmanship mean to you in the context of designing games, for instance?
I suppose for me, that means that it's something that you hone, and you never get to, okay, I've finished becoming a game writer. You know, you'd never, it doesn't, like, learning doesn't end when you have a craft. You can always get better at it or be more experimental or challenge yourself or collaborate in different ways, especially in games because it's young as a medium. And games writer, the role of a writer for games is different in different studios. So it's definitely a craft that is honed because you're kind of on shifting sands being in games.
Well, I love that perspective. Do you consider yourself a writer first or a designer first?
I guess it depends on the project and the structure of the team. But for Threefold Games, I don't think you can really extrapolate those things, because if you are writing without thinking about game design, then you're kind of just trying to plonk story on top of a game, and then that means that it's not going to support the game design or the systems within the game. You have to think of those things in tandem, because that's when you get the best experience. Like the gameplay needs to support the narrative, and the narrative needs to support the gameplay, and they kind of it's that interplay of those things that are is interesting or can be interesting.
So you went into game design. You mentioned wanting to combine two aspects of yourself, the creative and writing side and the games journalism side. Do you think those two sides have effectively meshed into one now?
Yeah, I mean, by the time I left games journalism, I was ready to leave games journalism. I've been doing it for a really long time, and it's kind of cyclical. You know, I think PlayStation 5 was announced, and I was just like, my heart sank. I was like, I can't do another sort of console launch where it's like, what are the, you know, the store? I could just imagine the articles are going to be. You know, what are the games going to be at launch? What's the price point going to be? What's the power, the processing power, and like, I mean, all those things. I was just like, I can't do it again. So yeah, I was really ready to leave, and you know, I was in the middle of production or development on Before I Forget, and it had gotten really positive feedback. So yeah, it was a whole new adventure, moving away from journalism. It was kind of weird and sad in some ways to, and you know, I still kind of miss sometimes having that freedom of, you know, that voice that I had, that sort of platform as a journalist. But mostly I'm fine with not being a journalist anymore. And yeah, I feel like it is a perfect mesh of the two sides of me. I guess I'm whole now, complete.
I love that. Yeah. Were you always into creative writing as a child, or were you always a creative child?
Yeah, I was always writing or drawing or sewing or like living in imaginary worlds, like literally like being two people. Like all my teddies had different voices and things like that. So,
And when you were young, do you remember what you wanted to be?
Yeah, I wanted to. Yeah, I did want to, because I did write. So I did like the idea of being a writer. I wanted to be a newscaster. I wanted to be Moira Stuart at one point. I also wanted to be David Attenborough. I wanted to be a zoologist, but I'm not very scientifically minded. So, but yeah, I really loved animals and sort of animal encyclopedias and. I'd be sort of like studying that. I'd get animal encyclopedias for birthdays and Christmas. Just that's all I ever wanted was like a new book on animals, and then I'd draw them. And yeah, I loved that. There were several phases.
Wow. Did studying English literature come quite naturally to you then?
Yeah, it was my strongest subject. So art and English were my best subjects by far, and probably because I loved them. So yeah, so it was a toss up between English or art at university, and everybody tells you not to do art. You have to be quite strong-willed and like really want to do it, because people are like, "You'll never get a job." I don't know why they thought I'd get a job with English, but there you go. But yeah, they're like, "It's really competitive. You'll never get a job." And I guess English is kind of adaptable, whereas art isn't so much, maybe. But yeah, so I chose English, and yeah, I got a really good grade in my English exam, so that kind of sealed the deal. Yeah, so
So do
that was
tell
kind
me a
of
little bit
long.
more about the different side hustles that you have, passion projects, big or small.
At the moment, I mean, when I was in the UK, yeah, there was a lot going on, because I also had like a game makers hub on my around my dining table, just with friends who were games adjacent, I suppose, or just interested in games. So maybe someone from my writing group or someone from my role playing group. There were lots of sort of people in tech in my writing group, and I was like, "Oh, like, do you fancy having a game dev hub?" So I did that for a while, and that was really nice, just sharing knowledge and stuff with people who were interested in making games but maybe didn't have time or didn't have the accountability to actually focus on it. But at the moment, my side hustles are Threefold Games. We have our next project, which is in very, very early stages, embryonic, I would say, stages. And then there's Windrush Tales, which is further along and is a separate from Threefold Games, but we've kind of created an umbrella brand called Threefold Presents, and Windrush Tales is the first game to be under that brand. And it's basically because people were assuming, because I was involved and Claire's sort of consulting on it, that it was a Threefold Games game. And it's not, because it was sort of started by me sort of independently to celebrate my Caribbean heritage. It was started between me and Corey Brotherson, who is also Caribbean descent. And so yeah, I have Windrush Tales, which is a narrative illustrated game about the immigration of people from the Caribbean to Great Britain as it was then in the 1950s. So it was a period of immigration between 1948 into the 70s. And yeah, so it's just sort of a game that charts three different characters, and it's a branching narrative that charts three different characters traveling from their respective islands and going to the UK and navigating a sort of a less than welcoming society, basically, and how do you, you know, how these people established a community and thrived through hardship and things like that. And my other side hustle is Pock and Play, which is an organization focused on the improving the representation and visibility of people of color in games themselves, as well as in the games industry.
Amazing. In terms of your various passion projects and interests, do you see them as buckets of separate things, or do you see them in a different way in which everything is melded together, perhaps?
That's interesting. I think, I suppose I do look for ways that they can inform each other. You know, Windrush Tales came around because of my own heritage and a lack of representation in films or TV or anywhere, really. I suppose part of what drives me is representing those unheard voices and experiences. So, I wanted to celebrate, because it was the 70th anniversary of Windrush, so it was about celebrating that. And then in terms of cinema, definitely in terms of like screenwriting and game writing, they're all just facets of me. Yeah, so I don't see them as separate entities. I guess they use separate energy pools.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Separate energy pools?
Playing games definitely uses a separate energy pool, because I don't really play games that much. And it's one of those things that people say in the games industry, that once you become a game developer, you don't play games anymore, because you kind of don't have time, and it feels like work a little bit, because you're always, unless you're playing a game that's like very different, and even when you are, if you're playing, you know, say you're working in AAA and if you play another AAA game, you're always going to be going, oh, that's how they did that, or that's, you know, interesting the way they segued from that combat into that cutscene, or whatever it is, or that game system is interesting. And even if you go to an indie game that's very different, you'll still be looking at ways that you can use that to inform what you're doing in your own creative space. So yeah, and because games aren't passive, I find them more tiring. So games definitely uses a different energy pool, and obviously that's how I make my living as well, so it's not as self-indulgent as other things I do. And the sort of Pock and Play, that's kind of emotionally draining, you know, that's emotional labor basically that you're doing for the industry, you know, trying to be really conscious of each other's energy levels, because it's draining.
Yeah. Do you still do creative writing on the side?
I don't really know, you know, other than side hustle, like game side hustle. But yeah, I don't write prose-like stories anymore. Because all that energy is put into work Monday to Friday, basically. So there's not much room left.
Do you write on pen and paper, or do you do it on the screen?
My first instinct is to, I have like three fountain pens with inked with different color inks. And yeah, so my first instinct is pen and paper. I really like writing longhand, but in work sometimes it's, the pace is so frantic that I don't tend to do that anymore. I tend to write straight into the editor. So yeah, it's kind of changed my process a little bit. And it, yeah, it's kind of cool because you just have to write at pace, which is really good exercise, really good discipline to have to be able to just write. But if I do get stuck, I will go back to pen and paper. There's that immediate brain to hand connection. And like, even if you can't write anything, you can still make a mark. Whereas on screen, you just have that blinking cursor. Which I guess you have in Word, but we don't have a cursor in our writing editor, which is great because they are a curse. Because it's just like blinking there going, come on, write something, why don't you? It just becomes this taunting thing.
I love hearing this process, and I'm really curious about your three fountain pens, and you said they're in three different colors. I love hearing about these things, so could you tell me more about that, please?
Yeah, so I've been toying with getting a fountain pen for a while, and I think I followed some fountain pen vlogger and on YouTube, and I went on a writing retreat, which, as you know now, is a thing that I like to do. So I went on a writing retreat, which was like a week in this beautiful Georgian cottage in Devon, which was just down the road from me. So it wasn't very far for me to travel. So, and I met a woman there, and she had a fountain pen, and we kind of hit it off, and we'd kind of chat and sat and wrote together. And I was like, the brand of fountain pen was Lamy, and I'd been kind of looking at getting a Lamy. I was like, oh, is that a Lamy? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, I've been thinking about it. So we got talking about fountain pens, and then she was like, oh, do you want to borrow one? And then she was like, oh, this is the ink, and it's like a limited edition because they release an ink every year. And then it was just like, then I was sold, because like, you can get all these beautiful color inks. And it was like, I think I immediately got home from that writing retreat, immediately ordered a pen and some ink. And it was cool.
Do you feel different when you're writing with a fountain pen compared to a normal pen?
I haven't written with a normal pen for so long. Well, I suppose I did the other day at the post office. I had to sign something, and they just had, you know, those little little throwaway pens. I kind of feel bad when anyone comes around and they're like, have you got a pen? I'm like, I've only got a fountain pen, and they're always like, I haven't really written with another pen. But yeah, I think it makes my handwriting look nicer, and yeah, it just feels nice. It's kind of makes a ceremony of writing.
I love that. So you've got three different colors. Do you use them for specific things, like one color for one type of writing?
So that was the other thing this woman did. She wrote in a different color every day so she could see what she'd written, but she did sort of bullet journal, so she's much more organized about the whole thing than I am. I'll just pick it depending on what my mood is, or if the thing on that page is connected to this thing, then I might write in the same color, but then if it's like a different topic, then I'll change it. Usually it's just like, oh, I haven't used November Rain for a while, or whatever the name of the ink is.
Do you have a routine? Like, do you, you know, need to sit at a specific place, use a specific pen, listen to something to get you into the mood, for whether it's writing or designing?
No, I suppose it depends what scene you're doing or what you're doing, but no, I mean, generally, because it's, you know, the side hustle, sort of side project stuff, you're kind of grabbing moments in life to do it. So I think if I had some ritual attached to it, it would never get done because you'd be like, oh my God, it's just too much noise or whatever. It's like, well, I've only got half an hour and I really need to get this thing to the team, or, you know, I need to do something, or I need to create a doodle poll so that we can have a meeting or whatever it is. So yeah, I don't think I'd get anything done if I had any kind of ritual around it. I don't think I really did anyway. I mean, when I lived in my house in Somerset and I had a garden, quite often I'd like writing in the garden or in the shed, because I had a home office then. Mm-hmm. So the home office was very much a workspace. Also, you know, I wasn't doing creative writing then. I was a journalist and a copywriter. So I couldn't really write in that space because it felt very work oriented and like in a non-creative way. So I guess that's why the pen and paper means I can write anywhere. It never runs out of battery. Yeah. And yeah, I can go and sit in the shed, like get up early and sit in the shed or something and write outside was always nice. So yeah, I suppose I had that kind of ritual then in terms of space. But then I liked writing in cafes as well. Yeah, I was sort of writing with another writer friend of mine who was part of the writing group. She'd just come round and we'd just sit and write.
Interesting. You started with going to writing retreats and workshops, and it sounds like you still have that community creative aspect, mm-hmm. that creative community of sitting with people, talking to people, writing with people. How has that been for you in the last couple of years, I guess, with COVID?
I mean, that's the beauty of writing games. Going to work is essentially going to a writing group every day. You're like collaborating not just with writers, but with all sorts of incredibly talented people from all sorts of disciplines. But I suppose I'd worked from home for like 20 years or whatever. So, maybe not that, like 12, 15 years or whatever. So it's kind of depressing because I'd made this mental switch that I was okay, I'm not working from home anymore, I'm going to work in an office. And I was like, this could be a disaster because I could have like huge culture shock and be like, what have I done? Let me escape the sort of 9-to-5 grind and, you know, going to the same place every day. I hadn't done that for like 12 years or something. And then 6 months in, they were like, you have to work from home. And I was like, what? I don't even have a desk. I decided that wasn't happening in my home anymore. I was like, so I didn't have, I was like, I don't need a home office anymore. Like my home can just be beautiful and work free.
Yeah, and then sanctuary, non-work sanctuary.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden I was just like, well, the only table I have is in my kitchen. So I guess my beautiful dining table is now.